Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the rare Sunday edition of The Yard. Hope you guys are doing well today. We open with Mississippi State softball in the peak position, in the, what do we call it, the birdcage seat? Is that right? In the Eugene, Oregon regional. How about this, right? And I wanted to get started on something positive today. But, man, how about Mississippi State softball, right? Pretty incredible stuff, man. And just to kind of get you up to speed, in case you've just kind of kept up peripherally, I know a lot of people are preparing for Harry Caray on the baseball side of things. But the reality of it is, we got a little something to cheer about. On the softball side, big day for the Dogs, man. We're in a good shape right now. Incredible shape right now in an NCAA tournament. So, all right, so let's just kind of back up a little bit. On Friday, Mississippi State walked off St. Mary's 3-2 in the eighth inning. Pretty significant, right? St. Mary's jumps up 2-0 in the first. State gets one in the fourth, one in the fifth, and that's where it stays until we get the extras. And Bulldogs walk it off. St. Mary's with three errors in the game. Alyssa Faircloth credited with the win. And, you know, it's just one of those things you look at and you feel like, man, this is pretty gritty. Yeah. Nadia Barbary with the walk-off to win it. Singles to right field. And run comes around and scores on one of those three errors. So the Bulldogs wins. You think, okay, great. We've won an NCAA tournament game. We should just be satisfied with that. But wait, there's more. So Bulldogs take on the number 12 seed Oregon Ducks and Mississippi State's Alyssa Faircloth throws a no-hit shutout as the Bulldogs upset the Ducks. One in the third, one in the fourth to win it 4-0. Bulldogs bang out seven hits in the ballgame. One of those home run in the first to jump ahead 2-0 and just kind of nurse it long. What an incredible pitching performance. And the Bulldogs win. So now you're thinking, okay, if you're the Oregon Ducks, you're in a situation, well, you went from needing to win one game to needing to win three more. Well, unfortunately for the Ducks, unfortunately for Mississippi State, St. Mary's beats Oregon last night 5-4. So the Ducks eliminated from their own regional. The Bulldogs, coming out of the winner's bracket, will take on St. Mary's this evening at 6:30 on ESPNU. For those of you inclined to watch, Bulldogs could clinch the regional or have to play an elimination game immediately following against St. Mary's, a team they've already defeated. Granted, it was a nip-and-tuck game, but that's the reality of it. So, for those Bulldog fans up there, you got a lot to cheer about. Now, Idaho State was the fourth seed. We didn't get to play them. But so people say, hey, Steve, what if we win one of these two today? Well, we advance to a super regional. In Norman, yeah, assuming that Oklahoma's going to win. Oklahoma, obviously, one of the better teams in the country, and rightfully so. But anything could happen, right? So the Bulldogs on the verge of winning an NCAA regional. And so congratulations to Coach Ricketts and Coach Bratton and everybody involved with Wood State softball. You've made us awfully proud, but you know what? We're not content with this either. We want you to continue to do some cool things and, you know, to win a regional. We just hadn't done that very often, right? And there's the thing, too. A lot of people say, well, it's an SEC bias, right? There's so much of that is just envy, right? It's not even a hot take. It's just envy. But your Bulldogs eliminate one of the better teams on the West Coast. And then ultimately they fall last night. And so now the Bulldogs will take on St. Mary's for the right to advance to the Super Regional round, be one of the top 16 teams in the country when it's all said and done. And it's so interesting, too, you know, with softball. You know, we've got 40 wins now. 40 and 18. We went 9 and 15 in the conference, 20 and 7 at home, 11 and 10 on the road, 9 and 1 in neutral side games. And so now an opportunity to make some more Mississippi State softball history. So for all of you that are very connected to Mississippi State softball, congratulations. But, of course, some big things ahead. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. We love Bulldog Burger Company. We do. We love them very much. We love them more than a friend. And one of the main reasons that I love them is the consistency. That's one of the things a lot of people tell me. Like when I travel, I try to eat local. Like when we were in College Station this weekend, tried to always eat local. I did go to Cane's. I will make that one confession. But I try to eat local. Got some great Tex-Mex out there. Went to a local pizza joint on Friday or Thursday night. And Gumby's Pizza there in College Station. Pretty good. Pretty good. And it's not Dave's, but it's pretty good. But Bulldog Burger Company, one of the things I love about them is the fact that I know every time I go in there, I'm going to put my feet under a table and I'm going to get a great meal with great service at a great price. And a lot of my friends, when they travel, they stick with the national chains. And they say, well, I know what to expect. I know what to order. I think that's part of the whimsy in life is going somewhere new. And I always ask people when I walk in the door, if you were going to sell me this place, what's the one thing I have to eat, right? And that's typically what I go with because, you know, the servers know, right, what people enjoy. And I have a good time with it. But you get the consistency of a national chain with Bulldog Burger Company, but you get the small town feel. It's a great combination, right? They've kind of mastered kind of their modus operandi, how they do business. And it kind of gives you that feel of, hey, this is a national chain level of consistency. But I'm still getting the small town charm that I have grown to expect from the Eat With Us group. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. Find your own favorites on that menu. There are some new items, of course, those smash burgers. I think I may have one for dinner, as a matter of fact, now that I'm back home, right? And maybe if you're not feeling a burger, maybe you want to eat a little green, you can. Get that BLT salad. I prefer it grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not judging. Every salad I get ranch dressing on it from South Mississippi. It's just kind of how it works. But three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Rich and Flowood area. And again, I've got a man on the inside. My youngest son, Ian, has worked there for, goodness, I guess 3 or 4 years now. And loves being a part of that team. They treat him so incredibly well. And so if you've got a young person maybe moving to Stark Vegas that's looking for a job, consider applying at one of the eatwithus.com restaurants. You can visit eatwithus.com for more information. And, of course, to order gift cards for the Mississippi State folks in your life. All right, we're not going to do some big dramatic breakdown, but I'm going to talk about the weekend. Because, like you, I don't want to relive it. I was there, of course. And one thing I will say before we get into all this other stuff, the first thing that I'll say is we are incredibly honored to be your eyes and ears. We are incredibly proud to have attended and covered every single Mississippi State baseball game this year. Everyone. Midweek, weekend, home, away, all of it. We got some amazing stories to tell. We've told many of them to you as it happened. But I want to thank all of you for making so much of that possible. Without your viewership, your readership, your subscribership, we wouldn't be able to get out and go do those things. You make those things possible. And so on behalf of me and all of our staff, we are very grateful to all of you for your support over the many years. And if you're not using jeanspage.com as your source for Mississippi State news, then you're doing life wrong. Somebody else can go out there and maybe copy and paste a media relations release or just kind of, you know, put something else together. But we're going to give you actual quotes and live in-person coverage. For as long as my health holds out, that's the plan anyway. So again, maybe we'll see what happens when I turn 60, God willing. But you know, crazy game on Thursday. And kind of like the Auburn series, right? We jump out there, we smash them pretty good. We feel great about life, right? It's like, dude, we got the first one. And let's just kind of take a moment and go backwards in time. We all pretty much agreed, other than that very, very dedicated self-loathing segment of our fan base, we all agreed we had to get one. We wanted to get two. We would have loved to have gotten three. And I said on the show, I thought we'd win the series. I didn't think we'd sweep. But we had to get one. We had to avoid getting swept. Well, we get one. We get the first one. And again, it's one of those things, when you get the first one, you become so hopeful about the weekend. Right? So, A&M jumps out 2-0. And I saw some of the social media traffic afterwards. Again, I think I have a $1 million idea. And maybe one of you can help develop this. And, you know, we can just split it. I'll take the half mil. You can take the other half, right? I would like to design an app that enables your significant other the ability to disable your ability to post on social media while a Mississippi State game is being played. I think that works well because I'm trying to save you from embarrassment. I'm trying to save you from popping off prematurely. That happens. It happened during this game. Grahovic jumps out 1-0 with a big, great at bat here and hits a home run to right field. And then Hakopian homers, it's 2-0, and people are like, man, we're throwing batting practice, this is over. And then in the third, we scored more runs in an SEC inning than Texas A&M has ever surrendered, ever. I do want to go back and kind of recap some of this, just the scoring plays in this inning. All right, so Garrett Frye comes up, drives in a couple runs, it's tied. And right now we're thinking, okay, at least we've gotten even. And then Ace Reese singles through the left side, run scores. Sully then pulls one through the left side, run scores, 4-2. And you're thinking, man, okay, great. It's third inning. We got Tico on the bump. We've survived this little first inning, home run fiesta of theirs. And we start one of our own. Jacob Parker absolutely murders a pitch to right field. And that's against Gavin Lyons, too, who has been their most reliable pitcher out of the bullpen, at least in middle relief. It's now 7-2. Right now you're thinking, dude, we are in great shape. We're up 5 runs with our most consistent pitcher on the mound. Then Vitas Valinkas, he singles to center field. That chases in Blake Bevis, 8-2. And then Maluski, right before it happened, I turn to Jacob Bain. Jacob's like, hey, you know, we got to worry about this Mendoza line thing. I said, don't worry about it. He's going to hit a home run next pitch. He does. It's now 10-2. I just want the game to get over, right? Because I'm thinking, dude, we got 6 more innings to play. But certainly with an 8-run lead, we should be okay. Sully then singles to center field, drives in another. And then Jacob Parker, again, caps the scoring of the inning with a double to left center, 2 more runs scored, 13-2. And I saw some of those clips where some of those homers from A&M were talking about, well, it's all easy hits. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But it's 13-2. I mean, I just want to get the game over, right? I'm enjoying the moment, but I want to get the game over. Then Valinkas homers to left, 14-2. Off the bat, I thought it's probably going to carry to the track. Just kept going. The wind's blowing out. They get a pair of runs in the bottom of the fourth to make it 14-4. Reese then homers to left to make it 15-4. You think, hey, we got one of those runs back. We get the other one back when Valinkas rolls one to short. They whiff on it. Another run scores 16-4. So we're up a dozen. And then wild pitch scores a run, 17-4. And again, I just want to get the game over. I'm thinking, let's get a mercy rule in 7. Maybe save an arm for the rest of the weekend. Wouldn't that be great? Well, they hit a 3-run bomb. Dewar, the left fielder, just kind of runs into one. Now it's 17-7. Mercy rule still intact. And then, of course, in the seventh inning, if we catch a routine fly ball to center, the game is over at 17-7. But instead, we drop it. It basically ends up working as a triple, and then they get a ground out to third to run score. So now we have to play the eighth. We don't score. They score another. Makes it 17-9. And then Caden Sorrell, who had a great weekend for them, doubles in two more. Makes it 17-11. And then who'd have thought we wanted an insurance run in the ninth? We get one. We went 18-11. But it kind of felt like a loss, even though we won. And again, we said we got to go get one. We got one. Not that we should be satisfied with one, but at the bare minimum, we got one. And but yeah, there was just this negative feeling because, like, you know, we dropped two fly balls and, you know, we basically gifted them four runs. We weren't done giving, though. And again, just kind of looking back, man, it's like the only starter that didn't have a hit for us was Blake Bevis in the ballgame. And that's not singling him out. Blake's done some good things for us. But again, 8 of 9 starters, very productive as the Bulldogs score 18 runs on 16 hits. And it wasn't like they were just walking the ballpark. They did walk some guys a little bit later. They brought some younger guys in. They walked 8 in the game. We only walked 3 in the game. And one of those I thought we got squeezed on. 3. Typically, when you play 9 innings and walk 3 or less, you got a good chance to win. You do. You got a good chance to win. All right, so let's jump over to game 2. And this is, again, another one I thought we should win. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. And I remember talking about this with you guys. I said our best case scenario is to win Thursday, Friday, because you just can't. Game 3 pitching, we hadn't been able to trust it for the last couple of weeks. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And so I felt like, you know, hey, Duke gives us a good start here. We got a chance, right? We knew that we were going to get their best effort on the mound, because once you get some extension in game 1, they just throw back at the bullpen guys. I mean, they only really burned one dude, and everybody else is able to come back. And so we kind of got in the same situation. We get down 2-0 again. It felt like LSU all over again, right? Caden Sorrell hits a 2-run shot. And it's interesting, too, thinking about LSU. And I mentioned this to some of my scouting friends. LSU kind of ambushed us in those first couple innings with our starters. And then they struggled extensively against the bullpen. Remember that? We were like, dude, we didn't get a quality start the whole weekend against LSU. Yeah, that kind of happened here again. It makes you wonder what the common denominator is. Duke Stone, guys, goes 2 2/3 of an inning, allows 7 runs on 9 hits. Guys, they scored 4 runs the rest of the game. They had 5 hits the rest of the game. Excuse me. 7 hits the rest of the game. And 2 of those came late. But I think there's something to that. I think there's some self-scouting we have to do that ensures that maybe we're doing something. I know there's like these Sherlock Holmes people out there that's like, oh, yeah, this happened and so-and-so saw that. No. But in this ball game, it was like, again, you get down 2-0. And then in the second, we score 1, right? We get the bunt down, things go crazy. When you get good bunts down, it puts pressure on defense. Then Big Lou singles to right field, run scores. We're even in the second. And what do you know? We get another bunt down, and the run scores. 3-2 ball game. Well, Sorrell triples then. They take the lead, 4-3. And then, in the third, Sully evens us up with a home run, makes it 4-4. And then, Stallman homers to center field. Bulldogs are now up one, and I'm just thinking, man, I wish we could get more out of this with this wind blowing out. Well, it factored in. Bender up, homers to left field. Really the only thing he did all weekend. I really wasn't impressed with him. But it's a three-run shot. Now it's 7-5. And then Grahovic homers again. It's 8-5. What are you thinking? There's still plenty of ballgame left. Maybe we can make it interesting. And then Ryder Woodson, who I think showed you this weekend that he's worthy of the job. He homers to left. It's 2-in. Now it's 8-7 as we go into the middle innings. And Caden Sorrell again comes through for them. Two RBI double down the line, make it 10-7. And then we come right back. Sully in the sixth hits a two-run bomb to make it 10-9. And so basically you got, you know, about a nine-out fight here, and you're down one. And unfortunately, the only run that scores the rest of the way is Kellner is hit by a pitch. I got a chance to meet that young man and his family. That's the young guy against Ole Miss that got beamed in the face. And he did play through it. He didn't do much this weekend, but great young man. I just had to tell him, I said, dude, he's a baseball guy and a baseball dad. I just want to let you know I'm impressed. I've been worried about you. I was worried. Bad hop, ball inside, that something significant could happen. But great young man, great family, and wish Boston Kellner the best for sure. He stopped me yesterday as we were leaving to say goodbye. Just a great, great, great young man. But again, you know, people talk about offensively. Guys, you know, we have 7 of 9 starters that get a hit. Ryder Woodson went 3-for-3 in the game. Or excuse me, 2-for-3. And so you just working through this. And it's like, you know, Vitas goes 0-for-5. Bryce goes 0-for-4. You got those guys hitting right there. But everybody else, we sometimes kind of crap on the top of the order. No, you know, Sullivan went 3-for-5. Every one of our top five hitters had a hit. And 4 of those 5 drove in runs. So we can't be upset with the top of the order. But again, you felt like, well, you know what? They're not going to have any pitching left for game 3. They didn't. They didn't. And we didn't take advantage. It's on us. It is yesterday is on us. Period. It's on Mississippi State. Give Texas A&M some credit. But it's on us. And this is a game we're going to spend a little time with. It's ridiculous, man. And McPherson comes out, and we're just so glad to have Ryan back. And he's not back to being Ryan yet, but he's a competitor. We get 3-0s, right? And if I had told you on Friday night, hey, we're going to open up 3-0s, you're like, dude, I'll take it. Well, I'm reading my box score wrong. We give up a run in the third. So Ryan puts up 2-0s. But you wouldn't have expected us to have the pitching problems when we saved so many guys for game 3. There's so many guys that were fresh. And then 2 of the guys that were the better relievers on Saturday are guys that do on Friday. You got to nut up, man. Sometimes you just got to nut up, right? Pardon my language. But, yeah, I mean, we air it short, and we give up a run. But it's just one. So through 3, it's a 1-0 ball game. And in the 4th, Bryce does a job. We get the run home. It's 1-1. Sorrell then reaches on the fielder's choice. Run scores 2-1. And, of course, these guys are getting on base because of walks. Hakopian singles to center field. That chases the run home. It's 3-1. Well, then in the 5th, Ace Reese homers to right field, clutch, ties the game 3-3. And then Sully, we go back-to-back, he homers. It's now 4-3. It stays that way until the 7th, and then they get even. And again, we're walking people left and right. Felt like the March of Dimes. Kellner, Just talked about him. He singles down the right field line. It's crazy. You think we're going to get out of this, right? And it's just a dying quail down the line and right. The only hope was it was going to get foul. It didn't. Run scores. And just when you think it's over, Jacob Parker, again, coming up clutch against Fresh Corn, one of the best closers in the country. On an 0-1 count, he hammered a baseball in the right center to give State the lead 6-5. Now, it's 6-5 on the road against a team that is shook up. You got to close. You got to get six outs to win a series. You got to get six outs to give yourself a chance at the top eight, even though it was slim. You got to get six outs. And that's not what happens. It's not what happens. Bear Harrison in the eighth, singles to left. And two guys score, and that ultimately proves to be the end of the game. The story of this game, though, is Mississippi State's inability to throw strikes. 13. We walk 13. It just can't happen. Ryan McPherson, again, not upset with Ryan. He went out there and did the best he could. He did walk four, but only one of those score. Dane Burns comes in. Pretty good outing the first time out, and then not so much. Doesn't give up a single hit, but he walks two. They both score. Ben Davis, and God bless Ben Davis, pitching three consecutive days. He had three walks, but you know what? Didn't allow any of them to score. Tyler Pitzer goes out, does a good job. He does give up one walk. Yeah. Maddox Webb, just not right, guys. It's not right. It's just not. Hopefully he'll be ready this week and certainly. But then Charlie Foster, you know, a guy that we had such high hopes for. It just hadn't come together. It just hasn't. You know, he had that great outing in South Carolina. We thought maybe he had turned the corner. That kind of proves to be the anomaly. He goes one inning, allows two runs on four hits, also a couple walks. Yeah, Gleason comes in. Doesn't give up a hit. You know, Gleason, and it's, again, the thing you think about. So one of the things I'll say, if there's one criticism that I'll make of O'Connor, I think we're too reliant on the lefty-lefty matchup. I think we mix and match a little too much. I think when you got a guy that's rolling, and listen, I understand the math, and it's just like you bring in Charlie to pitch to a lefty, and then, of course, they pinch hit and bring in Pardita, who would, you know, had played all weekend, and we walk him, right? That's the kind of thing that gets you beat, right? But 13 walks, man. And I asked O'Connor, of course, you know, people just read the paraphrase questions. They don't really pay attention to what I actually ask. I was like, yeah, coach, it's tough to win any ball game, much less a one-run ball game when you walk 13. You know, what did you see today? You know, we all saw the same things, but I wanted to get his comment. You know, and then I'm like, you know, coach, hey, you got a bunch of quality losses, but there's been too much of this. Of course, people don't pay attention to that. They just read the paraphrase. But yeah, there has been too much of this. We have proven that we can play with anybody. But we haven't proven that we can beat everybody. That's what worries me going into the NCAA tournament. Like if I asked you right now, without thinking about it, without overthinking, hey, can this team win a super regional? You'd say no. I think most of you would say no. Can they win it? Yes. Do you expect them to win it? No. No. And some people would say, well, we had too big of expectations. No, we did not. We're not going to go back and have this revisionist history. Well, you know, Steve, with the gift of hindsight, absolutely not. This team was preseason top 10, consensus top 5 for most people as we began college baseball. And, you know, I want to spend a little time kind of breaking this down, and I don't want anybody to think I'm taking a shot at any of these kids because we're going to need them all to make something of this postseason. And every season, really, you judge it by how the season ends and where it ends. Like the 2018 season at Mississippi State was terrible. We had to sweep Florida just to make it to Hoover. Remember that? And you don't even remember the struggles. You just remember that we went to Omaha, right? You look at 2019. One of the better seasons in Mississippi State history. We make it to Omaha, and, you know, I don't know that we could have beat Vanderbilt. They just kind of had our number. But we should have beaten Louisville, right? We should have advanced and had an opportunity to play Vandy again. And that's what you remember, right? I mean, even though you say, hey, we went to Omaha, it was a good team, but you still feel like maybe we underachieved. Again, I don't think we get out of that bracket. We should have won a game. And JT Ginn out there pitching his tail off for us in Omaha. And you go back, obviously, 2021. And I don't know if you guys know this. In 2021, we won 40 regular season games. 40. This year, we've won 39. And we played one less game. We only put a 55 game schedule. And so the same team that won an AFL championship had a regular season comparable to this one. And I think it's one of the things that a lot of people kind of forget. Like in that 16 SEC championship team, like for a while, we just can't sweep anybody. We win Friday, Saturday. You know, we throw Dakota Hudson and Austin Sexton out there. We win Friday and Saturday, but we can't win. And we can't sweep. And that's when Pilk was a freshman, obviously. Eventually became our ace. But, you know, one of the things, you go back to that 2021 season, if I can get it out, you know, we ended up winning 50 games that year, obviously, right? But let's just kind of work through this. You know, we talk about, well, we didn't have the signature series win. I don't know that we had one that year either. Now, we did go win at LSU, and that's always a significant thing. Then we get swept at home by Arkansas. We sweep Kentucky, an unranked Kentucky team. We sweep a bad Auburn team. And then we get 2 out of 3 against Ole Miss. It was a good Ole Miss team. We lose 2 out of 3 to Vanderbilt on the road. We sweep the last place Texas A&M team. We go to South Carolina. They were terrible. We take 2. And then Missouri comes in here and takes 2 from us. And then we go and beat an Alabama. We sweep an Alabama team. And then we get blown out in Hoover, back-to-back games. So, again, you go back and you look and say, hey, any win over LSU, your true baseball rival, is big. And any time that you beat Ole Miss, your all-sports rival, it's big. We didn't have really a signature win in 2021. And it's kind of the same thing now. I'm not going to sit here and tell you this team's fixed to win a national championship. I'm just trying to underscore the fact that seasons are defined on how they end. Because many of you, if you recall, didn't think we were worthy of a top 8 national seed in 2021. Especially after getting shelled at Hoover. Didn't think we'd even deserve to host. And we're going to talk more about hosting later in the show. But I just wanted to draw some parallels. You're never as good as your best weekend, and you're never bad as your worst weekend. The result this weekend was bad. The pitching at times was bad. Offensively, I thought we actually played pretty well. We played well enough to win offensively. And you say, well, you know, Steve, we should have done this, should have done that. There's always, you can never have enough runs. But we should have won the series. And had we won the series, again, maybe you're in the conversation headed to Hoover. I think you'd have to go make a run in Hoover to be a top 8. But you'd be right there in the top 10 in the RPIs. So you'd have a fighting chance. Now you don't, right? Now you don't. So it's just important to understand, you know, get us in the tournament. And again, more on hosting a little bit later in the show. But this season's not over. All right, we're not going to do a top 10 list today, but we are going to do our read for closewithblair.com. Blair's our friend. 25 years of experience in the mortgage loan origination industry. Mortgage loan origination can be a complicated process. You never know what an underwriter is going to ask for. Maybe it's a lock of hair, a pint of blood, maybe your first report card. You never know. It all seems very random at times. Blair knows the underwriting guidelines. He knows how to construct your loan to give you the best chance of approval. And if you're not ready, he can help you get ready. He can put you on a pathway to home ownership. Maybe that's eluded you in the past. Or perhaps you've bought multiple homes and life has thrown you a curveball. Maybe you want to be closer to family. Maybe you've had a relationship change, a job change. I don't know your needs, but I know that you can let Blair Chandler do much of the heavy lifting for you. And if you've never bought a home before, maybe it's not just you. Maybe you had the wrong loan originator. Maybe it's time to try again. It's true. It's true. 601-500-2344. Save that number in your phone as Mortgage Guy when you have the need. You'll know the name. You may not remember it, but you'll have the number. Blair Chandler. It closes at Blair.com. Now, Blair's my homie, and his son, Finn, was recently in a car accident that was very serious. He is going to make a full recovery. He will have to make have surgery on his hand, but some of his friends' situation were much more dire. And, you know, it's just dudes out being dudes. They were like, you know, like less than a quarter mile away from home, just kind of hanging out. Next thing you know, they hit a tree, and it was a very, very serious accident. There's some very serious medical issues involved with those young people. Everybody is expected to make a full recovery. But I love Finn. I do. I love the Chandlers. I do. I love them. And when you think of something like that happening, because you guys know this time of year, it appears that we kind of have a rash of that. It's graduation parties, and you know, the summer begins, and there's a lot of people experiencing true freedom for the first time, and sometimes that can be a dangerous combination. And so my heart and thoughts and prayers go out to Finn and all the other people involved. Again, Finn is my homeboy. I've watched this guy grow up, right? And it matters to me. It does. And I remember being a kid, and I think I've shared some of this with you guys maybe once before, but you know, Tracy Blanchett was a guy from our hometown. He played at West Marion, probably the best athlete at West Marion, regardless of sport, right? But man, we all grew up as rivals. You know, we were at Columbia High School. West Marion was our rival. They called us the City Slicker, as if there has ever been a City Slicker from the town of Columbia, Mississippi. But anyway, it's small town rivalries. But anyway, when it was all said and done, we had our graduation party, and Tracy and his cousin were out partying and wanted to come just kind of make the peace with everybody and wish us all well as we began life. And on the way there, he had a car accident and he died. And it's one of those things that has stayed with me all the way up into my adult life. We didn't know each other especially well. I knew his name. He knew mine. We played ball against each other. We spent time, you know, growing up in the youth leagues of Marion County, Mississippi. And he had some big things happening in his life. And we lost him far too soon. And I remember all of us kind of going out there to that huge pine tree that he hit out in Goss. And yeah, every time I pass by there, I still see the scar in that tree, and it kind of takes me back. And we all went out there, me and a bunch of my friends, just to go visit the site. And I'm glad that the friends of Finn Chandler and those people don't have that memory. But I share that with you because we have a lot of young people listening to the show and a lot of parents of young people. Be careful, okay? Be especially careful. Because when you're young, you feel invincible, right? You think nothing's ever going to happen to me, but you know, sometimes it does. And it's important to understand that these young men, they will eventually be whole again. And I may know some of them, or at least their families. I just you know, Finn's my emotional investment because Blair and I are so close. But I share that with you guys because it is always so important to be reminded that life is a gift. And there are some times that I drive way too fast. Right, just coming home yesterday from Texas, I was so intent on getting to I-20 before dark. And on the roads back, you know, you get somebody out there to run a little bit of interference for you, and you get a little pure. And when you've got a fast car like mine, sometimes you want to get her out there and let her dance a little bit. And I do. And probably should be a little more responsible at times. So I don't want to be a hypocrite. But I'm also a guy that's in my mid-50s. That has a lot of experience driving. And so I, you know, maybe I know when to push and when not to. When you're a young person, it's so easy to be a distracted driver. Everybody wants to be on Snapchat or we're watching a TikTok as they drive, and it's just distracted driving is a terrible thing. And so, not saying that's the case with these guys, I don't know. But I just know that there are five families out there that are they're having to deal with something that's very, very traumatic, but at least we're not planning a funeral. Right. And that's one of the things I think it's important to understand. Maybe it's a Waterloo type moment. You know, you kind of like, hey, we need to be a little more careful here. And I just hate it so much for the young man that was driving. It's never anybody's intention, you know, but you blame yourself. You know, again, I don't know all the details behind it. You know, maybe you are at fault in some respects, because you know, you're the person behind the wheel and you got the lives of four other young men in your lives, in your hands. But the reality of it is everybody is expected to make a full recovery. And I just wanted to use this, number one, to show my support for Finn, but also to all the other families that are dealing with this. And again, some of those injuries are much more severe than what Finn did. And you say, Steve, well, Finn's going to have surgery. He is. And that in and of itself is very serious. But when you think about the fact that he is one of the lucky ones, if not the luckiest of that group, it kind of provides some different context. All right, let's look back at the weekend it was in the Southeastern Conference. Then we'll look ahead to the SEC tournament bracket. And we'll talk a little bit about the Mississippi State's hosting chances, right? All right, so we go back. Every series started on Thursday. And so Kentucky, we needed to get some help. But again, we got some help, but not enough help. But at the end of it all, we didn't help ourselves, right? So we end up being the eighth seed, which is disappointing, because we expected to be one of the top four seeds throughout the year. We started SEC play 7-2. And we end up 16-14. That's not a good finish. Now, granted, I'm not going to sit here and discount the fact that you lose your Friday night starter for 2 months. You're going to feel it. You lose William Kirk, a guy you expected to be one of your primary midweek pitchers and possibly some on the weekend out of the bullpen as a left-hander. If he's healthy, that's probably him coming out of the pen yesterday. So I'm not going to sit here and discount those things. I'm also not going to make excuses for us. Kentucky helps us a little bit with a 4-3 win over Arkansas. Arkansas made it interesting in the ninth with a run scored. But the Wildcats win to improve their record to 13-15. Vanderbilt takes care of South Carolina, game 1-9-1. It really wasn't much of a game. Connor Fennell, the Sunday guy kind of masquerading as a game 1 guy, is now 4-2. He had 7 Ks in the ball game. Alabama takes care of Ole Miss in game 1. I know some of you were like, Steve, if we've got to root for Ole Miss, we probably don't deserve it. And I get it. That's kind of been the mantra that I've lived by. I'm trying to be a little more diplomatic in my older age. But it's a 2-2 ball game in the middle innings, and Ole Miss takes the lead in the sixth, and then Alabama with 3 in the seventh kind of coast the rest of the way 5-4. Tyler Faye now 9-3. He has proven to be a very good pitcher for Alabama. Missouri makes it a fight for a while, but ultimately they succumb to Texas and lose 6-3 in game 1. Florida pretty much did what they wanted to. And again, LSU, I mean, it's like, what a disaster of a season. They had some more pitching guys out there that they had to pull this weekend. And Florida's just too good. You know, if you're going to throw your second line weekend rotation out there, you're going to have a tough weekend. And they did. LSU actually, out-hit Florida 12-8, but they lose the ballgame 11-8. Kyle Jones 2-for-2 for the Gators. Stephen Milam 3-for-5 with a home run and 3 RBI in the game. We really needed Tennessee to kind of help our RPI a little bit, but also, too, we kind of cleared things with Oklahoma some. They did. 9-7 win in game 1. Big insurance run there in the ninth. Tegan Kuhn, the SEC pitcher of the week last week, goes 5 innings pitched. 4 earned runs, 5 Ks. So not a great start, but he gets the win. We needed Georgia to take care of Auburn. Great start to that weekend series. Georgia wins it 2-1. I don't know if you say, hey, Steve, it's low scoring considering Georgia. Well, again, Georgia's on the road. Make of that what you will. Joey Volchka gets the win, 2-1 win. He goes 5 innings. Ryan Wynn with a solo home run for Georgia. That was very significant in a 2-1 ball game. Auburn limited to just 4 hits. And so, again, after day 1, you're thinking, well, we're getting some help. We're not getting enough. We got our win, and we go into Friday thinking, okay, we'll get our win, and then we'll get a little more help. Well, Arkansas bounces back to level the series with Kentucky 5-4. Arkansas with 3 errors in the ball game, but they're able to overcome it. Vanderbilt takes the series from South Carolina at Hawkins Field. No shock there. 9-5 is the final. 6 runs in the first for Vanderbilt, and they just kind of nursed it along from there. It'll be interesting to see what happens in South Carolina. Ole Miss evens the series against Alabama. Tyler Rabe, a guy that I was very impressed with when we played them in our series at Oxford, and he has, you know, made the move to from the first guy in the bullpen to a weekend starter. So he gets the win there. Shutout. Man, Bama held to just two hits. Missouri and Texas, again, Missouri, not much of a fight, but they get down a 10-0 in this ballgame, put up a sixth spot in the seventh to at least make it worth talking about, and Texas gets one of those runs back. They ultimately win the game, end the series 11-6. Adrian Rodriguez, a very talented Longhorn shortstop, goes 3-for-4 in the game. Florida takes a series from LSU. They mercy rule the Tigers at Alex Box. Liam Peterson goes 7 innings and strikes out 11 to earn the win. And it was all Florida early. It's 5-0 in the fourth. LSU gets on the board with a single run. Florida answers right back to make it a 7-1 ball game, and then they add 4 in the seventh, and then mercy rolled them. LSU hitting held to just 3 hits. One of those off the bat of Derek Correll. Georgia takes a series from Auburn, a much different ball game. Paul Fairley wins the game in relief. He's now 7-1 on the year. But it's Georgia putting up a 5 spot in the first. Auburn answers back with 2, so you know it's going to be an offensive game. But it's all zeros until the fifth. Georgia tacks on 3 more to make it an 8-2 ball game, and then Auburn answers back with 4 to make it 8-6 and remain in striking distance. An insurance run for Georgia in the sixth, Auburn in the seventh, makes it a 2-run game, but that's where the scoring is capped, as the Bulldogs win it 9-7 and take that series. So again, Georgia having one of the best seasons in the history of the Southeastern Conference. Tennessee takes a series from Oklahoma. 9-4 is the final, and they had to come from behind to do it. The Sooners jumped out to a 3-0 lead, but they don't score again until the eighth. When you don't score in 7 of 9 innings in a baseball game, you typically don't win. Evan Blanco, former Virginia Cavalier, is now 7-3. 6 innings pitched, 6 strikeouts in the 3-run performance. Former Bulldog signee Trent Grenlinger, 2-for-5 in a ballgame, proven to be a very good player. Vanderbilt ends up sweeping South Carolina. Again, we had 3-over-1, 3 on the other, didn't matter. You know, Vanderbilt is Vanderbilt. Anytime you can get a win, it's a great thing. Wild one with Arkansas. If I told you that you scored 10 runs in the first inning, you would think you won the game with ease. That was not the case for Arkansas, though. They get up 10-0 in the first. Then it is 11-0 in the bottom of the third. Kentucky gets a couple. And then Arkansas answers back. So it's 12-2. And again, kind of like our game, you just want the game to get over, right? Kentucky with 1-4 and then a 9 spot in the fifth. Now it is a 12-11 ball game. And a 12-0 fight on our hands, right? Kentucky doesn't score the rest of the way. Arkansas with a big home run there in the sixth, and then they put it away there in the ninth to win it 16-12. 31 hits in the ballgame. Zach Stewart 4-for-6 with a home run and 4 RBI. Parker Cole wins out of the bullpen for the Razorbacks as they take the series at Kentucky Proud Park. Florida completes the sweep of LSU. And I remember sometimes we think about the logo too much. And I'm guilty of that too when it comes to LSU. I just have all these memories of like Eddie Furness and Brad Cressy and Blair Barbier. And, you know, it's just you get PTSD sometimes thinking about LSU baseball. It is clear the Tigers have quit. It is clear. And again, give Florida a lot of credit. They're a good team. Don't get me wrong. But this LSU team, terrible. 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 They're going to end up with a winning record, and that's the only claim they're going to be able to make unless they win the SEC tournament. Based on what you saw over the weekend, I think we would all agree. Not going to happen. But Florida wins it 15-11. A lot of runs late. You know, your typical game 3 this time of year. Florida with 9 combined runs between the 8th and 9th. LSU with 7 in the 8th and 9th. And again, your final 15-11. Texas completes a sweep of Missouri, 12-7. A little more entertaining game for a while. It is 2-2 in the 4th, and then Texas puts up 6. And then Missouri with 5 in the 8. Pulls to within 1, 8-7. But Texas answers right back with a 4 spot to end it at 12-7. That's your final. Auburn battles back to salvage one game. They actually mercy rule Georgia here. And had to come from behind to do it. It was 3-0 Georgia in the second, and Auburn puts up a 3 spot to get even. They trade runs in the fourth. The big decisive inning, the fifth inning for the Tigers, is they put up 6. And from there, it's all Auburn as they walk it off 14-4. Daniel Jackson, 3-for-3 with a home run and 2 RBI, a losing effort for Georgia. Alex Petrovic, who has been really good for Auburn, is now 9-2. 6 innings pitched, 4 earned runs, 3 strikeouts. Brandon McCrane, the Auburn shortstop, goes 4-for-4. Alabama takes the series and probably gets a top 8 national seed. Probably. You never know what the committee is going to do. I'm going to share my thoughts on that a little bit later. But it's a 2-2 ball game going to the fourth, and then Alabama with 3, and they tack on 1 there in the fifth, and ultimately close it out. Alabama holds Ole Miss hitting to just 4 hits in the game. Dom Decker 1-for-4 with an RBI there in the third inning. Bryce Fowler, very talented center fielder from Alabama, goes 3-for-4. Oklahoma battles back to get the win. But they're going to finish a game behind Tennessee in the standings. Sooners win at 12-9, and it was one of those games, too, that's right out of the gate. Oklahoma jumps on Tennessee. They played this game at Breakdown Ballpark in Oklahoma City. I don't know if you knew that. It's interesting, right? But 6-0 after 1, and then they trade a pair of runs, and it's like back and forth, back and forth. But ultimately, in the end, Oklahoma too much too late, right? It was just too much for Tennessee to overcome. Reese Chapman, 4-for-5 for the Volunteers. Jason Bowden now 5-1 with the winning relief. Deedon LaChance, 4-for-5 ball game with 3 home runs for Oklahoma. Fairly significant day at the ballpark for that young man. So, you know, that's the weekend. And so let's kind of take a look and just kind of see, you know, what it all means, right, Steve? And we'll get to the bracket here shortly. But you're kind of looking at, you know, kind of how things went. If I could find it. But, you know, we talked about how we needed certain series to go. The ones that didn't matter as much kind of went the way we wanted. The ones that really mattered didn't. And that's probably the most important thing, you know. Again, looking back at this, you know, Alabama takes series from Ole Miss. Georgia does take series from Auburn. Texas sweeps Missouri. Florida sweeps LSU. Arkansas takes 2 of 3. Vanderbilt gets the sweep. And then, you know, Tennessee takes a series from Oklahoma. You know, and so kind of, you know, again, at the end of the day, all the help in the world doesn't help us if we don't help ourselves. And that's ultimately where we stand here as we get ready for the SEC tournament. Next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmark, a Starkvillian institution, man. When it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Make it easy and make yourself the winner, right? Buy Bulldogs more Bulldog merch. You can't go wrong. Whether it's something decorative for the home or the office, the car, the RV, or if it's apparel, just something cute, right? I mean, there's nothing like buying that going home outfit for your grandchild with maroon and white, getting them off on the right foot, or if it's a wedding gift, a housewarming gift, you can find everything you need Mississippi State related at Campus Bookmark. Stop by and see their smiling faces the next time you're in Starkville. If you can't make it to town, perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmark.net, courtesy of Al Gore's internet. Use promo code BSR. That stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. That's Campus Bookmark. All right, let's take a look at this SEC tournament bracket. Before we get too deep in the weeds, let me tell you this. The SEC tournament doesn't mean a whole lot. Okay? Not saying it's not important, but it's not as important as it once was. Because before everybody could make the tournament, if you could make it to Hoover, you could make it to Omaha. Well, now everybody makes it. Probably a good thing for teams on the bubble. I don't know that there are a lot of teams on the bubble. I'm not sure there are a lot of teams that are on the hosting bubble. But more on that later. As it kind of works out, your one seed in the tournament, of course, is Georgia. Texas is number two. A&M is number three. Alabama is four. Now, some would suggest to you that because of league finish, that all four of those are locked in to top eight national seeds. I don't believe that. Matter of fact, later today I'll have a column kind of explaining why I feel that way, but I'll give you a hint. It's not just about league finish. It's not just about RPI. But to suggest that RPI doesn't matter is to be disingenuous. So while, yes, all the top four are going to host without any question, I think there is some ambiguity in who may be a top eight. Working through the next four, your five seed is Florida. I think it's pretty safe to say they're going to host too. I think they're also in the hosting discussion. And I think you've got to look at that resume to resume. The sixth seed is Auburn. Number one SOS. Yes, they're going to host. Are they a top eight? I don't know. We'll see. Arkansas is the seven. Mississippi State is the eight. You know, again, we needed some results to go our way to kind of push us forward. But with us not winning two games this weekend, we're kind of at the mercy. So instead of us being the four, which we could have been with the right weekend result, we end up eight. And that's what happens. But you know what? When you leave it up to one weekend, those things happen. The nine seed, of course, is Ole Miss. Tennessee is the 10. Oklahoma is the 11. Vandy is the 12th. Kentucky is the 13th. LSU the 14th, South Carolina the 15th, Missouri the 16th again. It all gets underway Tuesday morning. Ole Miss will play Missouri. The winner of that game will play your Bulldogs in the morning game on Wednesday. Game two on Tuesday is Vanderbilt and Kentucky. Now, a little more on this later, but Kentucky may be another at-large number three because of how well Minj schedules. I think they would feel a whole lot better about beating Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt needs to win the tournament in order to make the NCAA tournament. Tennessee will play South Carolina. Tennessee finishes as the 10 seed. They should take care of South Carolina. They should. You never know in these tournament games. But, yeah, I feel pretty confident Tennessee's going to play. They're not going to host, but they're going to play on. Same for Oklahoma. They will play an LSU team, of course, that I think is just eager for the season to be over. Now, the winner of Vanderbilt, Kentucky, will play Florida, who's very talented. And Florida has kind of gone about their business kind of quietly, right? They haven't really challenged for the top four in the SEC. They have a good weekend. It helps them. But you remember when they had that terrible weekend against Alabama, people thought Florida was left for dead. They're not. And they are a legitimate Omaha challenger. Arkansas will play the winner of Tennessee, South Carolina. This Arkansas team, I think they were a team that would be considered a hosting opportunity after we played them. But I think there's some flaws within that team as well. I think they'll be a solid number two somewhere, probably somewhere close to home for us. And the winner of Oklahoma, LSU, will play Auburn. Eager to see how Auburn elects to pitch that thing. Auburn may be in a scenario where they feel like they got to win a couple of games just to be in better contention to be a top eight. Texas A&M, of course, ends up the three seed. They'll play the winner of Auburn/Oklahoma/LSU. Texas will play the winner of Arkansas/Tennessee/South Carolina. Alabama, who I think may be maybe the more overrated team I know they swept Auburn, and they've kind of ridden the strength of that sweep. I just think Alabama can be had. It's just my feeling. They'll play the winner of Florida, Vandy, Kentucky. And then Georgia, of course, will play the winner of us and Ole Miss, Missouri. So that's how the tournament kind of breaks down. So you never know. Everybody's motivation is different. And as someone that's had multiple friends that have been on the NCAA D1 Selection Baseball Committee, one of the things that I can tell you is one weekend does not negate the totality of the season. And some would say, but Steve, the SEC tournament is part of the season. And yes, it is. It can be very helpful to bubble teams. It gives the SEC representation more ammunition to work with for these at-large bids. But not every conference tournament is billed the same way. That's one of the reasons you can't give more weight to these tournaments. There are some tournaments that just have four teams. There are plenty of tournaments out there that don't have the full conference making the tournament. So you cannot give too much weight to a conference tournament. What Greg Sankey and the league presidents have done, though, is they have provided an opportunity for some of these teams that maybe have not had the most robust of regular seasons the chance to get another win or two and a chance to impress the committee one last time before they deliberate. Now, this time next week, the hay will pretty much be in the barn. They'll have an A bracket and a B bracket. We've had times where we've won the SEC tournament and really not gotten much benefit from it, right? Just making it to Sunday and winning it on Sunday kind of worked the same way. So they have an A bracket and a B bracket just in case that there's an upset in a conference tournament game. You may have a team that's not going to qualify for the tournament as an at-large win a conference tournament. And if it's a one-bid league, then that means that the chalk doesn't hold and you got to change a bracket. There are some other leagues that could be a two-bid league. And so you have your regular season champion that may get upset in the conference tourney. So then your regular season champion and your tournament champion both make it, provided that there's enough at-large spots. So they have these alternate brackets already ready. That's why shortly after the SEC tournament games are over, we announce a bracket. Because when they go to bed next Saturday or this coming Saturday night, they pretty much know how things are going to look. We'll know the hosting sites ahead of time, right? So we can begin to kind of make some plans. But it's not as dramatic as you might think. Now, the committee is going to have to make some difficult decisions, and we're going to spend our last segment of the show kind of talking about, you know, what makes sense to me and what I think that they're going to prioritize. And every committee is a little bit different. But if you look at the softball side of things, RPI was a major factor. I know you've got KPI, DSR, all those things, and all those metrics, state should be a hosting site. I don't think state's going to play their way out of a hosting site. So, yes, as of now, I expect us to host. There are some of our fans that think if we lose a game that we should drop from, like, the top 10 to, like, 50. You know, that's just there is that self-loathing segment of the fan base, and, of course, they have some cheerleaders out there that, you know, they put out the rallying cry, and everybody runs with it. And in the end, they end up looking silly. But it's a coping mechanism because they're happy if we host, and then they say they told us so if we didn't. It's a tough way to live, right? But, yes, I expect to host. And, again, more on that in the final segment of the show. But I think when you begin to kind of break this thing down, and I haven't done the research on it, but I can tell you historically, granted we've only had the 16-team tournament for 2 years, but historically, once we kind of expanded the field, the teams that play on day one have a difficult time hosting. It's not a hard and fast rule. There have been some exceptions. But if you don't finish in the top half of the league, you're not going to host. Not in the Southeastern Conference. There are 16 host sites. Do we get 8? Yeah, think so. And the metrics back that up. And one of the things that you guys have noticed is that one bad game, the final week of the year, doesn't necessarily tank your RPI. And you can say, well, why? Well, it's because you got 56 games worth of data to work with. So a big win may move you up a spot or two. A big loss may move you down a spot or two. Where State sits is in a pretty good position. And, of course, it won't be final until they announce it. But I think the expectation right now is that you should expect there to be at least one more weekend of baseball at Duty Noble Field this year. I think we can feel relatively confident that's going to be the case. That's how I feel today. I would have felt a whole lot better had we won another game over the weekend. Of course, if we'd won a game against Georgia, won a game against Tennessee, all those things would be a little different too. So all of that is to be expected. But we didn't take care of business over the weekend, but it wasn't just this weekend. We've had plenty of opportunities. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we started Southeastern Conference play 7-2. And I can back up even further. You know, we went to Arlington, Texas, and we had a chance to beat UCLA and then ascend to the number one team in all of college baseball. And we didn't get it done. And that's one of the things, again, we kind of go back to this whole, how do we feel about winning a super regional? Here are a few things, like big games that we have had. We talk about that UCLA game. You win that UCLA game, you sweep the weekend at Arlington, you are the number one team in America that Monday morning. We didn't get it done. Then we lose at Southern Miss, a game that we kind of gave away. You go to Arkansas, you have the lead. Ryder Woodson hits the big shot. We get walked off on Friday. A chance for us to really jump out front in SEC play, pick up a big road series win. We win game two. And again, you got a chance, kind of a rubber game in Fayetteville, and we lose that game. And again, this isn't a great Arkansas team. Now, granted, we sweep Vanderbilt. That was big. And we mercy rule them. And then we go to Oxford and we sweep them. Now, all of a sudden, Georgia comes to our place. And it's a chance for us to take first place in the Southeastern Conference. We get swept. Tennessee comes in. We have an opportunity again to kind of right the ship. We get swept. We go to South Carolina, one of the worst teams in the conference, knowing we got to at least get two, but we want to get three. We do get three thanks to an extra inning affair. Then Super Bulldog weekend comes. We have three very dramatic wins over LSU. You wonder if we're even going to play the Governor's Cup game. We do. We win it, which gives us four wins, which I think matters a little bit, and we'll talk about that shortly. We go to Texas, knowing we had to get one. We get one. But you look back and you feel like, you know what, we had a chance to take two. We had a chance to get game one. We didn't. That would have pretty much guaranteed us a spot in the top four in the Southeastern Conference. Well, then Auburn comes in. We destroy them on Thursday 10-3 and then blow it 5-4 on Saturday. And then again, game three pitching kind of abandons us. But the reality of it is we felt like, hey, the winner of this series is going to be a top eight national seed. That's how we felt. We didn't get it done. And again, this past weekend, you win one, and you feel like it's you're in the catbird seat. As I tried to say earlier, and I gave you a mixed metaphor, and we end up blowing game two. And then we get a lead in the eighth inning in game three. And so again, faced with kind of a play-in game between us and A&M, and I still think A&M is probably on the outside looking in at top eight. They may get it. I'm not on a committee. But I think had we won this, we'd be a top 10 RPI. We'd be in the top 10. And it would be reasonable to assume with a little bit of help that maybe we could have been a top eight. Again, you'd be in the discussion. It's not guaranteed. And then maybe if you're a top 10 RPI and then you go win one, maybe two in Hoover, then you get off that top eight bubble and play your way in. because you're playing high RPI teams. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by by the Historic Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially if you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. Google the Historic Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate for you. You can look at all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guest. It's Airbnb. It's VRBO. You can book through the Evolve website, though, and save some money. Book through Evolve and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10. The number 10 gets you 10% off your stay. We stayed there. We had a great time. You can check out the things that we were able to enjoy, like that full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area. Guys, it's just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, and you've got plenty of parking. Plenty of parking. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands off 182. So easy to get to. And that, you know, when you move around a lot, there's not always great places to park. I've had Airbnbs where I'm the only one staying there, and they didn't have a place to park. Had to park up the street. Everything is taken care of. So what, it's a ball game weekend, maybe a summer retreat, maybe it's a work event, and you want to get everybody under one roof instead of having everybody scattered all over Oktibbeha County or the Golden Triangle, the Historic Vegas Clubhouse is there for you. The Historic Vegas Clubhouse, best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none. All right, so here is kind of how I see it. And I talked a lot about this on the way home last night. There are some people out there that will say, hey, there are certain teams that are locks for top eights. Everybody's got varying opinions. Here's my feeling. Okay, so we'll start. UCLA, absolutely. But did you catch up with UCLA over the weekend? Did you see what happened with those guys? Did you? They're still number one in the RPI. But guys, they lost that game to Washington. They battle back to win the series, but they're a little bit vulnerable. It's true, but they'll be the number one seed in the tournament, barring something totally unforeseen. And there's Georgia Tech. And I will be honest, early in the year, I thought this Georgia Tech thing, this is an anomaly. But no, they're 45-9. SOS in the top 20, they will be your number two. From here, it gets a little more interesting. Auburn is 3 in the RPI. That in and of itself, being 3 in the RPI, 17-13 in the conference, number 1 non-conference RPI, no quad 3 or quad 4 losses. They don't have a bad loss to speak of. They have 17 quad 1 wins. I think they were top 8. Now, some people will disagree because of league finish, but they're 17-13, 4 games over 500. I think Auburn's a top 8. Then there's Texas. Texas won 19 games in the Southeastern Conference with a strength of schedule of 8. They are a lock in my estimation. They've had a couple of shaky losses, but that doesn't change the trajectory of the season. They won 40 games. 40 games is historically kind of been the threshold. Like if you win 40 in a power conference, you're in contention. In contention to be a top 8. I think Texas is a lock. I think Auburn is right there. Then there's North Carolina. 43 wins, 22 in the ACC. Strength of schedule's 17, so it's top 20. North Carolina has 1 quad 3 loss, no quad 4s. I think North Carolina deserves to be a top 8. That's how I feel. Some other people disagree. I think they're wrong. Alabama. This is an interesting one for me. Alabama is the number 6 RPI team. They didn't hit the 40-win threshold, neither did Auburn. And Alabama swept Auburn. Alabama's 4 in the strength of schedule, 7 in the non-conference RPI. All of the metrics, however, favor Auburn. And some people would say, well, I would give it to Alabama over Auburn due to the head-to-head. They finished a game better in the SEC standings, and they swept Auburn. And I understand that. But I don't think you can make a decision of this magnitude just based off one weekend, even though it's head-to-head. I get it. You have to look at the totality of the season. But I think I would give Alabama top eight. They went out and scheduled, and they got 18 conference wins. I don't know how you could really argue against them. Then there's Florida State. Florida State's Mike Alford is the chair of the D1 baseball committee. Guys, Florida State is getting a top eight. Not just because Mike Alford is on the committee, but because Florida State has earned it. 19-11 in the ACC, number 5 strength of schedule, number 5 non-conference RPI, one quad 3 loss, they go 12-1 and undefeated against a quad 4, so they don't have the bad loss. And then they take 2 of 3 from Miami, a team with a top 30 RPI. It took some doing. One of those games was even a mercy rule game. So to me, I don't think Florida State has anything left to prove. Then you've got USC at number 8. You absolutely cannot give USC a top 8. You cannot. They get one win against Oregon, so they have one win against a quad 1. You have to punish them. 32 strength of schedule. Doesn't work. My feeling, what I would do, because geography matters, I would make them the 16th seed. You say, Steve, all the way from 8, the RPI to 16? Yeah, let me tell you why. Because geography matters. I would pair them. Number one, you have to punish them for scheduling poorly. But I would pair them up with UCLA. I'd make them the 16th seed. I'd make UCLA the 1. And so, of course, that leaves a little room here. Who's number 8? Well, we haven't mentioned Georgia yet. Georgia, one of the most historic seasons in the history of Southeastern Conference baseball. 14 in the RPI. So they're absolutely guaranteed to host. You cannot let also-rans in the SEC have a top 8 and not Georgia. Georgia gets the top 8. But I think you have to punish them too when you got a non-conference RPI of 245. I make them the 8. I make them the 8. I do. You wonder a little bit about Florida. Florida with 15 wins against the quad 1, but they also have 3 losses against the quad 4. They have representation on the committee, but I think the metrics work against Georgia. I mean, can we work for Georgia in some respects and work against Florida in others? I would have Florida as the 9 seed paired up with Georgia in the Super Regional. That's what I would do. I don't know what Scott Strickland and the committee will go for. But I also think that Mike Alford and Scott Strickland are going to sit in the same room. And I think both of them are going to want a path to Omaha. So I don't think that you have Florida go to the 10 seed and then be paired up with Florida State. Now, Florida's going to have to go through a difficult super regional. And so I think it's going to be Georgia rather than Florida State. That's my feeling today. Then we've got all these grow the game people, right? We do. You got Nebraska at 10. 23-7 in the league. Not a great baseball conference. They're 43 strength of schedule. I think they're going to get some grace, but I don't know if they stay at 10. If they do stay at 10, then they would be competing against Florida State. Now, if I'm Mike Alford, I like that matchup. If I'm Mike Alford, I may not want Texas A&M there. Texas A&M goes 18-11. They're 11 in the RPI. And you say, Steve, but they finished top 4 in the league. Guys, they got a non-conference strength of schedule of 218. The only team, well, because there's 2 teams in the top 20 that have a worse non-conference strength schedule is Georgia and West Virginia. my feeling, I don't think you can give Texas A&M a top eight. I think they are one of the higher 9 through 11s, right? Then there's Southern Miss, and there's Mississippi State. Southern Miss is not going to be a top eight. They are 12 in the RPI. I don't think that their representation is going to want Mississippi State paired up with them. I do think Mississippi State hosts. What I think happens here, and I think this makes good sense, I think Southern Miss hosts, obviously. They deserve to host. I think they are linked with Auburn. I think you, because you can maneuver this a little bit, you can maneuver it however you want. Southern Miss going to Auburn for a super, and you know what? Southern Miss may get Ole Miss in there as a number two, because I don't think Ole Miss hosts. We're not going to get 9 hosting spots. Ole Miss finished 15 and 15 in the league. They're not going to host. But I think you manipulate a little bit. Does A&M go to Florida State? Pardon me. Does A&M go to Texas? You want to sell some tickets? You can't for that. And so I think State ends up somewhere probably as the 12 or 13, just kind of depending on how you want to manipulate things. Then there's Oregon and Oregon State. Geography has to play a factor because you got to have some West Coast teams. Oregon is 20 and 10. Oregon State, strength of schedule is 62. Yeah, they won 43 games. You cannot continue to reward them for being an independent and kind of manipulating the schedule. Guys, they have 2 quad one wins. They can't host. Oregon is 11 and 9. They didn't hit the 40-win threshold, but they're at 38. And they beat USC over the weekend. You absolutely have Oregon host. Absolutely. So, let's run it back. Basically, RPI teams 1 through 14 are going to host. 1 through 14. And that leaves you 2 more. Oregon is the other. And so then you got to figure out, what do we do to kind of make this, you know, the last thing to work? I think it's West Virginia. And West Virginia's RPI is 19, but you don't have a Big 12 team hosting. Now, granted, the Big 12 has been raided over the years, but it makes a lot of sense. And maybe I give West Virginia the 15 seed and pair them up with Georgia Tech, because I think they would be one of the weakest. So USC at 16, right? I'm writing all this down as we go. USC at 16. 15 is West Virginia. That's my feeling. You may disagree, and you're welcome to do so, okay? And again, I'm going to put a lot of this pen to paper here a little bit later. We talk a little bit about, okay, so where do we go from there? I think Oregon is the 14. 20 and 10, 38 and 15. They're 3 spots behind Mississippi State. It could work out that State's the 14, you know, because you could argue that, you know, State's missed some opportunities. But I think it's Oregon. That's my feeling right now. And then I think, again, you kind of manipulate as you need to with Southern Miss and Mississippi State. I like Mississippi State going to Tuscaloosa. That's my feeling. And the reason that I say that is because of the fact, I think that I think Alabama deserves the opportunity. And I think geographically speaking, it makes a lot of sense. So again, I think you kind of move some people around to get the matchups you want when it comes to kind of putting this thing together. And again, I'm going to type all this stuff out. But the main question you want answered is, Steve, can we host? Yes, and so, and one of the reasons that I think you should feel a little more confident about that is because there's not much upward mobility for the teams behind us in the RPI. As we mentioned, Ole Miss finished 15 and 15 in the league. If memory serves me correct, there's never been a 15 and 15 team host. Oregon State Is it 17? Well, they're not going to have the benefit of a conference tournament to improve their standing in the RPI. Right? I don't know if you guys thought about that. They're done. Right? There's nothing left for them to do to improve their standing. And if we lose one game, we're not going to drop five spots out of the RPI. Right? You're not going to drop behind them. And even if you drop one spot. So I think, again, that's something that has to be considered. Wake Forest is 6-14 against the Quad 1. I don't know that you can reward that, right? Mississippi State's 9-13. You know, we'd like to be better, but we're not. But we're better than 6-14. And again, West Virginia, again, a team that you're already kind of making some moves with, but at least they're 8-4 in the Quad 1. The strength of schedule hurts them, but you know, you want a Big 12 team to have that. You want to get some more teams on the eastern side. That makes good sense. And Oklahoma finishes, you know, again, you know, they're not going to be able to pass Mississippi State. So, again, somebody has to host. And, I think State will be in there somewhere between 13-16. And, again, 16, I think, has to be SC, and West Virginia has to be 15. So, State's in there probably 12, 13, 14. Does that make sense? You know, kind of depending on where you want to get these geographical matchups to work. Well, you got to put a bracket together. So I think you can rest assured, no matter what happens at Hoover, that Mississippi State's going to host, barring something totally unforeseen. You never know how the committee is going to work, but the reality of it is the metrics, the way they're set up, and what the committee has done historically, Mississippi State should host, and fans should expect to be here. So what I would encourage you to do is to go ahead and book your rooms if you hadn't done so. You can always cancel them, but be thinking ahead for postseason baseball at Duty Noble Field of an NCAA regional. Now, the fact that we'll be on the back end of the host sites, you're going to get a Power 4 team in here as a 2. Is that somebody from the ACC? Hey, is it Wake? Maybe. Is it somebody from the Big 12? Is it somebody from the Big 10? Is it Kansas? Is it Cincinnati? Is it Virginia? You know, they love that kind of stuff, right? They love the thought of Brian O'Connor's team coming here. And I think they love Oklahoma going to Nebraska. I think all of that kind of factors into this thing for everybody. You know, it's geography, but also kind of writing storylines. Wouldn't you like to see Nebraska and Oklahoma play? I suspect the people in Oklahoma would love to make that trip, right? So you're going to have some good teams, like a Tennessee. Like Tennessee's 31 in the RPI right now. 31 in the RPI, and then Tennessee could be a team, obviously, that gets in somewhere as a weaker number two. The 2 and 3 games, basically the same thing. And we talked about Kentucky. Kentucky's 34 in the RPI. So you get a win over Vandy. It's not a huge RPI climbing opportunity, but it keeps you in that at-large region. That's important to understand. And so there will be some reaches on the back half for some of these 3 seeds, but I think everybody in our league is probably good. Again, I think you get 8 host spots for the SEC. And I think you get, you know, pretty much everybody you expect to get in the SEC baseball standings. I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, just kind of run it back, right? So, absolutely, Georgia, Texas, Texas A&M, Alabama, Florida, Auburn, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Oklahoma, all 11 teams are in the tournament, for sure. There could be a 12th, right? I think Vanderbilt needs, because of their RPI, Vanderbilt needs to win the tournament. If Kentucky beats Vanderbilt, I think we're done. I think you get 12 teams in. Kentucky's the last team, which probably means they got to travel out west or something. But I think that's how this thing's going to play out. And again, I'll write this stuff up a little bit later and give you some more dialogue. But the bottom line is you want to know if we're hosting. Yes, yes. As of now, all the metrics suggest that Mississippi State is hosting, and we deserve to host, period. If you hadn't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles. That includes Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, the national championship book, and The Dude, along with the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. I will be working the spa later today to help Dana out, and then I'm going to float. You need to come float, too. Plus, you can see those beautiful dozen roses that I bought my beautiful wife for our anniversary on Friday. 33 years, happy to say. And dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my beautiful bride and schedule your own float. I haven't floated in, I think, 3 to 4 weeks, and I am well overdue for a float. I can feel it in the quality of my sleep and just traveling over the weekend. I need the rest and relaxation. And come join us over at jeanspage.com, 50% off the annual subscription price. We're going to be around, as again, we've covered every single Mississippi State baseball game, every single one of them, and you guys make that possible. And if you'd like to see that level of coverage continue, we encourage you to come be a part of the jeanspage.com family. That's going to do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. How about that? Back tomorrow on Monday. Yeah, back on schedule Monday. And we'll spend a little more time kind of extensively talking about the tournament and some other things happening in college athletics, including some basketball transfer news, as we kind of get ready for Mississippi State to start hosting some official visitors in football too. So back on schedule tomorrow, Monday, Wednesday, Friday of this week. Of course, your Wednesday show will come after Mississippi State's game on Wednesday. So, and again, there's some random forecasts. We'll keep you updated on that. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.